Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister for a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of The Irrational, which was on NBC. Yeah, and starred Jesse L. Martin, who had played Joe West on The Flash for 8 seasons. And it was an 11-episode season, so short season, but covered quite a bit of ground, actually a surprising amount. It's one of those where it's a police procedural. We'll get in a minute to what makes this particular investigator unique, but in addition to the episodic case, there's the big overarching case. You know, what happened to this guy 20 years ago? And they actually pretty much resolved that, I think, by the end of the season entirely.
I'd say yes. I mean, he still has gaps in his memory.
So but the mystery aspect is solved.
They could return to it if they wanted, but they've solved the who done it and the why done it.
Typically, when you set up a big bad plot line like that, that's the arc for the series, not the season. It's like the Red John thing for The Mentalist. I'm trying to think of what would be some other really good go-tos where, again, who killed Trudy for Monk?
Yeah.
You know, there are certain ones that, in this case, they were going back to that as a subplot throughout the season. In other shows, it touches here and there. There'll be episodes that touch it, others that ignore it. But for an 11-episode season, to have it as a subplot, and I was expecting it would get to the point of, okay, let's move it to the next level of peel back the onion layer to the next thing for the next season. And they didn't do that, which shocked me.
Well, and what happened 20 years ago was a major turning point in the main character's life, as well as what brought him together with the person who became his wife and is now his ex-wife.
Yeah, the event 20 years ago starts the story, even though we pick it up at the current day. Now, what makes this investigator unique is he is a behavioral scientist and apparently the world's expert on human behavior, particularly the irrational part of it that's predictable.
Yeah.
And this series is based on a book called Predictable Irrationality that came out in 2008, 2009. And I don't know if I read that back a decade or plus ago. I may have. You've gotten it on Kindle in the library, so I'm a chapter or two into it. And if you had taken the subplot of the bombing 20 years ago that left him scarred and that whole mystery thing, which is based on the author's experience having, hidden IED or whatever, an explosive in a war sort of situation?
Yeah, he was serving in the Israeli military and an IED went off and he had similar wounds to what the main character here has. And in fact, the main character here gives the same story about part of what got him so interested in the research was having the bandages changed.
Yeah, horrific burns over a large percentage of the body, all this sort of a thing.
And how both the patient and the nurse deal with the pain of changing the bandages.
Yeah, because it's traumatic for the person experiencing the pain and the one who's having to inflict it.
Yeah.
And that's in the first chapter, or maybe even the introduction of the book. And just having read that much, I can definitely see where they said, you know, this would make for an interesting protagonist of a procedural. And you obviously need to change things up to make it work as a procedural. Hence, let's have a bombing that happened at a church 20 years ago that set this stuff up versus the real life misfortune of the author.
Well, by giving us the 11-episode arc of the whodunit, they invested us in the character in a way that simply having a backstory that's resolved might not have.
Or permanently unresolved would not have.
Yes.
You're right. There was that need for that sort of a thing. But every time I see a procedural that's got that secondary big mystery, I always worry that do they have enough for it to stretch out for the series? They need to speed it up, slow it down based on are we going to get renewal or not. And when we were going into the final episode of the season, as we often do before we started, it's like, okay, let's get that checklist of what do we feel they need to do.
Yeah. Well, and one of the interesting things that they were doing with this investigation, because 20 years ago, it was a bombing of a church filled with black people. So kind of on two levels, you had the hate crime aspect in terms of hate crime against black, but also it could have been a anti-Christian thing. They were going entirely for the black hate crime.
Yeah, typically when you have a religious hate crime, particularly in this country, it's usually not the Christians.
It's the mosque or a temple. But they were going at full force of this was a hate crime. So when they spun some of the aspects.
The reveal that it was covering up a murder.
Yes.
Was very interesting. I think they had a good plot for that overall arc.
And who the target was.
Yes. And it got to the point where over the course, we know the person who built the bomb, who went to jail for the bombing. And we learn that, okay, somebody's pulling his strings because he throws a parole hearing very blatantly.
And they did that well. Cotton really knocked it out of the park.
He did a great job as a recurring this season and not going to show up next season. And they do get a second season.
I mean, Walton Goggins from Justified is someone else who they could have cast in that role. And honestly, I think he'd have been the wrong choice because he would have been over the top. Based on other performances we've seen by him, I'm thinking Justified specifically.
Part of what made his character work in Justified was the over-the-top.
Yes.
Almost literally holier-than-thou bad guy.
Yes.
Whereas Ben Cotton here had some good range and had, again, his parole hearing was not a major part of that episode, but it was a key part of that episode, even if it only took a few minutes.
Well, what got me there is he was saying all the right things, but because it was such a brief scene, and because we were just meeting him, we knew about him, but we were just meeting him. So we didn't know if he was only saying the right things.
Did he mean them? Did he not? Yes. And that's a scene where when you first see it, you take it one way.
Yeah.
As it plays out and there's somebody peering in through the door that we don't see, and suddenly he's saying exactly the wrong things to get parole, very intentionally. It's like, something happened there. But then when we think back on that scene after we learned various things in the rest of the season, you can see different aspects of the character. And we get another one where he's much more front and center in the storyline, the episode storyline.
Yeah, and that was a great episode, both for him and for Jesse L. Martin's Alec.
Yes.
And for the assistants, for that matter. Not that they were doing much, but the interplay between them of we've gone from rivalry in the beginning to if we're the only two in this together, we've got to help each other.
I never really felt there was much of a rivalry because that would have only been the first episode or two, if that.
Yes.
And it's funny because this show has a lot of similarities to Numbers.
Mm-hmm.
In Numbers, math solves everything.
Yes.
And it was the younger brother of an FBI agent. Here, it's the ex-husband of an FBI agent.
Mm-hmm.
And psychology or behavioral science solves everything.
Yeah.
And we've got Professor Alex Merker that Jesse L. Martin is playing and doing, again, great job.
Mm-hmm.
He has two teaching assistants, grad students, whatever. And there were a few episodes, they were front and center and very involved. They were some of the early ones, like when they go to the casinos and stuff, which I thought was a great episode. And we see a former student kind of a deal. And that led me to believe those two were going to be major factors in every episode. And there were a couple where they get a phone call. Yep, we'll go research this a little bit. Oh, he gets the results. And that was about the extent of it.
Yeah. Though I did like the experiment with the guitar.
Yes, because they're told to do an experiment. We get a little bit more of them actually doing it. Sell two items, give one a story, and the story will inflate its worth.
Yeah.
I forget what catchphrase they put on that.
Yeah.
But then it turns out the control guitar sold for an outrageous amount, and they've brought the guy in who bought it to hand it to him. But before we do, we need to understand. Alec walks in on that, and it turns out the one he bought, this guy knew he was paying well over market value for, but it was the exact same make and model that he learned to play the guitar on when he was growing up. His daughter was getting into the guitar, wanted her to have that same experience. So while the students thought it was disproving the effect, it was actually proving it because it was that sentimental value. He had his own story.
But the other thing they threw in there that I thought was a nice touch was when he was in his early 20s and he needed money in college, he had to sell his.
Mm.
And he's looking at Rizwan as he says that, almost like he can tell, I know you're having to sell yours because you need money.
Mm. So two stories.
Yes. That added layer of I was willing to overpay because I wanted the sentimental value and I could tell you needed the money.
Well, one of the ways that this differs from numbers is numbers would have the here's the mathematical principle or whatever. And we would often kind of pause the story a little bit to get a little information on that, a little mm-hmm. exposition, often to the point of let's pause the scene, put a bar chart or line graph or some
yes.
numerical, you know, explanation on the screen.
Yes.
As we get the voiceover. And it was beautifully done.
Oh, my favorite was when they had the sprinkler.
That was the exact one I was thinking of. It might have even been from the pilot where the sprinkler goes, you're going to have waterfall in certain areas. More of it's going to fall in a certain area than others because of the arc and all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And they pause it with the drops of water falling. And we've got the math over the drops of water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That show went, I forget how many seasons. I want to say five, maybe six thereabouts. They did such a great job. It was David Krumholtz who played the mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave just such a smooth, convincing rendition of all of this stuff.
But for me, the problem was that a lot of the math was high level enough, and I am not a math person at all, that we were watching that about the same time. I want to say we were watching Librarians or a show like that, because we were watching one show that was very magic-based. And here we're watching Numbers. And there were times where I'm like, Numbers seems to be magic driven to me, but the magic based show I'm understanding.
Those rules I can follow. Yes.
Like it's mathematically and science based. Well, whereas here, they, and it's a poor choice of phrase, but they dumbed down the principles of the psychology and sociology and human behavior because they showed it to us with the experiments.
Often they did that. Often they just explained it. But what they never did, for the most part, was pause the story mm-hmm. and show clips of the experiment or something like that. Well, there was one where they did the grocery shopping one.
And that's the one I was thinking of, where they showed us, as Alec is explaining it to, I want to say, like, the district attorney.
And I think that was the pilot episode.
Yeah, I think you're
and
right.
I think they realized, wait, Numbers has done that to death.
Yeah. Right?
That was at least a decade ago now, but often they would just go through, explain it, maybe show an experiment with it, but some of them they used enough in conversation, and part of it is when you've got two behavioral science students who are hanging out and psychoanalyzing themselves to death to a degree.
But see, in the casino episode, they gave the students a budget, they sent them in a casino to do an experiment. I honestly didn't fully understand the experiment there.
It wasn't an experiment. It was basically immerse yourself in the culture and try to understand it.
Okay. So that's why I didn't understand what they...
It was questionnaires for the gamblers. That's why they had the clipboard and asked some questions. We've got to fit in.
Yeah. Which is why I didn't understand what they were supposed to bring back to Alec.
It was a research trip.
Yeah.
But that was one where they should have had a little bit at the end of, okay, what'd you learn?
Yeah.
So they're doing a show that variants of it have been done before. Numbers did the math version of it. Perception did another kind of psychology.
I was going to say Perception and Mentalist are what I would kind of put in this time, in this genre.
Well, Perception
genre.
Did the abnormal psychology one.
Yeah.
Mentalist did it with kind of the con man aspect mm-hmm. and breaking that down and explaining it.
But for me, both of those were if we understand the person.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, it was if we understand the people in the situation, we can get what we need.
Yeah, I think this and Numbers are both, if we've got the right study, scientific model, or...
And part of that comes from the having college professors in the key roles.
Yes.
So we've got a lot of similar both jargon and, well, like several times we have the things on the screen at the head of the lecture hall.
Yeah.
Even when we're on the 24-hour date, which I thought was hilarious.
Well, and there were one or two times, and I think it goes back to the pilot episode, where Mercer seems to run an experiment literally overnight.
Yes.
So they got away from that. There was a little more time for some of that.
Mm-hmm.
They've got all that, so they're able to explain away. This is why somebody does something that seems insane or literally irrational, but here's what's leading them to make them think it's rational.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they've got a really good example in the first chapter of the book, and we may do an episode on the book because it's fascinating.
The book is amazing, and I want to stop there just for a moment and say, so often when we watch something where it's got the slide that says either inspired by a book, based on a book, whatever, it's a novel.
Yes, this is not a novel. I mean, it's a...
It's written conversationally.
It's a pop science book kind of a thing. Yeah. And it's one that the author is talking directly to you, the reader. So the only character generally involved is the author itself, other than the fictitious people in anecdotes or what have you. And like he's going through the, okay, I did a study, took a bunch of photos of students, had people rank them, found the ones that were the most attractive, whatever. Took some of those, did some photoshopping, you know, move the nose a little bit, get the eye a little, make the people who were good looking a little less good looking. Give people a sample of, okay, here's three of them. One that was either clearly better or worse looking than the other. And then take one of them and give the kind of the minus version.
Yeah.
And what it's showing is the decoy effect of you've got that one that's different. So it's hard to judge it against the other two. But the other two, you can clearly compare very easily against each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the better of the two is what's going to win out. And one of the examples he gave was The Economist. Do you want the online subscription for X dollars, the print subscription for Y dollars? And it was like 60 versus 130 or something. Or the print and digital version for the same price as the print only.
Yeah.
And when he did the study with the students, 16%, oh, we'll take the digital. 84 or whatever said, oh, we'll take the combo. It's the better deal.
Yeah.
Ran the experiment again, taking out the combination one.
No, taking out print only.
I thought he took out the...
Did he take out the combo?
I thought it took out the combo and it was only digital or print.
Oh, okay.
Same pricing. And without the combo one at the same price of the print only, the print didn't seem as good of a deal and the numbers shifted drastically.
Yeah.
And how by what you offer and how you offer it can make people think certain ways. Now, in The Mentalist, they would do that as kind of, and this is how we're going to con somebody to do what we want.
Yes.
Here, it's this is how we're going to explain how somebody else got somebody to do what they want.
Yes.
So there's a different aspect there, whereas The Mentalist was much more of the con artist approach to it. But I felt they touched on the behavioral science aspect every episode and stayed on brand on that.
Mm-hmm.
They had a good episodic mystery.
Yeah.
I think they did a surprisingly good job with the overarching mystery of the season.
Yeah.
And again, at that final episode, I was thinking, okay, they've got to resolve these things. And for that overarching one, they need to get to end of book, but not end of series closure. In other words, it's got to, we've made progress. We've gotten past that first hurdle, but there's more.
Yeah.
And when they get to the, not only have we gotten to there, but we resolve the full thing after that. I'm like, well, I didn't expect that. And then we get a little montage of, okay, this student's going to go work for this other professor. This person's going to do some stuff for the FBI. This person's going to do this. In other words, life is changing. It's mm-hmm. moving on. People are having kind of those threshold events or whatnot. And I'm like, it fades to black. I guess, well, they're ending the season there. Nope. 6 weeks later, we've got then a, what, minute and a half maybe scene?
Thereabouts.
That sets up the instigating incident for presumably the next season.
Yeah.
Which they've got, so I'll forgive them for that. But I always kind of hate it when they do that because now they're locked into that.
Yes.
And as recent years have shown, there's a lot that can change between ending one season and starting the next.
Yeah.
A writer's strike, an actor's strike, or maybe it was director's strike, whichever.
Actors.
A pandemic.
Yeah.
Networks can change hands, streaming can come into play or go out of play, you know, so many things can happen. Executives can change at a company that increase or decrease the likelihood of a series coming back. I mean,
the interesting thing is they can actually go in two drastically different directions from what they set up.
How so?
Well, for all we know, they're going in a Mr. Z direction as opposed to a kidnapping direction.
I took it as a very clear kidnapping. The question is, were they kidnapping her to take her out of play or to use her for something? Either way, Alex is going to be trying to figure out what happened to her the whole season. Yeah. Whether she's involved in the season or just shows up at the end or shows up dead at the end, who knows?
Yeah.
But they also have pretty free rein on Alex's office having been literally blown up an episode or two before the end of the season.
I thought that was an interesting decision.
Yeah, yeah. I expected this show to change between seasons, somewhere between the halfway point and the two-thirds of the way point of the season. Not that there was anything wrong, but Alec was working with enough different investigators that I felt they hadn't really figured out what was working there at the outset. They had the students front and center and almost invisible in some episodes, I felt. They hadn't really gone in with a clear game plan on that.
Yeah.
And again, they did really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt like there was enough variance in style and level of involvement for different characters in different episodes. And then we had three or four recurring characters very clearly written out of the story. I don't really feel we had too many that were really written in as replacements or anything. So I figured the second season was going to have some change, either in the regulars, more likely the recurring characters, and kind of shift the focus a little bit, not radically, but subtly, and kind of fine-tune it. Kind of like Orville between seasons one and two.
Yeah.
Where the first was kind of, is it Star Trek or is it a spoof of Star Trek? And it wasn't really balancing that well, but they really hit that balance with the second season and stuff. So the question is, what do they feel they need to adjust the balance on this show?
Yeah.
Is he going to spend more time in the college, more time investigating? What's going to be the way the cases come in? Who's he usually working with? I don't know, but I think they did a really good job with this season.
They really did.
I just question, having closed off that mystery, the big mystery aspect, and having such key turning points for so many characters there at the end, can they get into the second season maintaining that progress for the characters without it feeling like too different of a show?
A good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's going to be one thing if it's like an 11-episode season, another if it's like a 22-episode season, if they even still make those.
Which is also a good question.
If, and this is a huge if, they were to get like a 22-episode-ish order, I would recommend they break it clearly into two 11-episode half-seasons. Do the lead-up to a Christmas break kind of a thing. Do a second season kind of, you know, effect, or, you know.
A second arc.
Second arc afterwards, as if they were separate seasons.
Yeah.
Because I think having the shorter episode count focus things a little better. I never felt any of these episodes where it's like, geez, why are they doing this?
I enjoyed the Malcolm Jamal Warner swatting episode.
Yes. Yes. And that was a good guest star.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of familiar faces, but many of them were like the Ben Cotton kind of recurring, not key character. Not, I don't say not key characters, but not big name stars.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think of others that would be good examples of that. There was the one where they go to the casino for the poker game.
Mm-hmm. Jocelyn Hedden.
And she's done a number of things on Hallmark and stuff like that that we've watched.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's going to be on, I want to say one of the Chicago shows, maybe.
Interesting. She did a very good job.
Yeah. So I'm glad they're getting a second season. I enjoyed this, frankly, a lot more than I thought I might. I mean, I liked Jesse L. Martin in Flash, but he's now the lead character. They set the lead character up as, in the pilot, potentially not overly likable.
Yeah.
Not having necessarily the soft skills or whatever.
Well, they set him up as almost detached from his own emotions and basically having detached himself from a lot of things when he went through the 3 years of recovery from the burns.
And that's one of the things I think they rethought after that pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of my favorite moments in the season were when he was acting as that father figure to one of the students and one time to another burn victim.
Yeah. Yeah. He does those scenes so well.
Yeah.
Well, there was a great scene with Phoebe where he has just this apologetic look on his face as he's like, I want to come back to your very valid feelings, but I think we've just had a breakthrough.
I'm trying to apologize for you for something I did that was insensitive. However, I think I just solved part of the case. So, and that actress Molly, I forget her last name.
Molly Kunz.
She did a terrific job.
Yeah.
There were some episodes she wasn't given a lot. Others episodes she was given a lot more.
Yeah.
The one where she has the panic attack and stuff was a good episode for her and the other student.
Yeah, Arash Demaxi, who plays Rizwan.
Yeah. I felt they could have set up the panic attack stuff a little bit better, like, at all.
Yeah.
But it kind of made sense, and even if they'd just given a line or two of dialogue, if the other student had been like, not why are you having panic attacks, but if she'd basically said, after this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, how are you not having a panic attack?
Well, and even just because we had the episode with the reporter, where we found out their mom had died.
Yes. That was a good episode for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually when a character was given good material, whoever they got for the character was up to it, to doing it well. And there were a few times where, in the hands of a lesser actor, this could have been overacted or just not quite delivered, or they didn't give them quite the right material. But I think the writing team here, other than a few things in the pilot of he's divorced his emotions and a few things like that, they rethought and retooled, but subtly.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the second episode was like, what's going on here? None of that. It flowed smoothly. But you could see some minor retooling and rethinking and recourse correction and stuff over the course of the season to really fine-tune the character to be more likable, for him to realize he's still got some healing to do.
Yes.
And some stuff like that. I liken it to kind of the first season of the original MacGyver series. If you look at that pilot episode, the character doesn't come out fully formed there.
Yeah.
He's probably 80% of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
But things like the disliking of guns to the level he had it later, the sense of frustration he would have with Jack Dalton and some of that sort of a thing, those all were built in later. And it wasn't, again, a radical change. It's a, let's sand the edges off, let's revector slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really good writing, both in the original MacGyver series and certainly here, where you can early on recognize going down the original trajectory might not be the best of ideas.
Yeah.
But not doing a 180, not doing a sharp left turn, but just kind of slowly revectoring and subtly with a couple of key lines, a couple of things like that, really plays out well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, having Jesse L. Martin, who's got tons of experience, particularly just on The Flash, playing that father figure.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was on Law and Order. He did Rent on Broadway.
Yeah. He's got no shortage of experience.
Yeah. Just an incredible career.
Yeah. I was just afraid this was going to be another by-the-numbers procedural, what's the quirk on this character, and that's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have very easily, particularly given how he was in the first episode, Alec Mercer could have been a very unlikable character very quickly.
Yeah.
Which may not have been a bad thing, but it'd have been a different show. Because I think the twist you could have done with that is you don't have the same two students throughout the season.
Oh, they keep coming and going?
Yeah. He gets another new one.
Yeah.
And if you were to have done that, the twist I would have done is the dean or somebody in the department head or whatever, if it wasn't Mercer, because that's never totally clear.
Yeah.
Would have basically said, what's going on? Why are you doing this? And have it either be, he's doing it as an experiment to see who signs up, who sticks with it, or whatever. What type of personality does that do? Or he's just really that hard to work for. And maybe he claims one and it is the other, whatever. I mean, there's tons of ways they could have done it. But for him not to be a manipulative person like the Mentalist and stuff like that worked out well.
Yeah.
So, again, I think they did a really good job with this. I can definitely see why they're getting a second season.
Yeah, me too. And I see why it got picked up for a second season early.
Yes, yes. I just think the first few episodes of the second season may likewise determine, does it and should it get a third season?
Yeah.
Because my expectation is you would have, again, episodic stuff and an arc for the season, which presumably is, can we get so-and-so back? Or what happened to so-and-so? I don't want to give away who. And have it get a clean ending at the end of the second season.
I'm hoping we get them back almost immediately. And kind of like we spent this season trying to figure out the 20 years ago problem. We spend season two trying to figure out the recent thing.
We get that person back, and now he's not trying to figure out what happened to him, but they come back either with amnesia or not knowing what had happened or whatever, and they get to help with the mystery of what happened to me.
Yeah. It puts the shoe on a slightly different foot.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a very clear reversal, which is common practice when you do either a sequel, and often a TV season is a sequel to the previous season in that respect. So I could see that happening. If they do it well, I'd be okay with that. But then I would also expect a few other things to be reversed. Instead of Alec Mercer kind of pining over the ex-wife, we already got hints that the ex-wife may do that to him next season.
Yeah.
That's where ongoing storytelling gets challenging.
Well, the other question, though, is, was Bob really a lone wolf?
They closed that off well enough that even the other members of that circle who could come into play probably wouldn't and shouldn't, because the instigator, the key player, was taken out.
Okay.
I'm considering that done, and if it's not, I think that's a mistake.
Okay.
Because then it's you're going back to that again, and they could do that half a dozen different ways. But to give us a sense of finality of that arc is what makes me think we're going to have arc-long stuff for the remainder of the series. And that's fine if they're all good, different, but the challenge with an ongoing thing of this sort, whether it's sequels of a movie or subsequent seasons of a TV show, if you do a vector one season and then you kind of reverse aspects of that vector for the next, do you flip it back again for the third? Do you go 90 degrees off? You know what I mean? How do you keep the spirit of the show the same without feeling like you're going just running laps? Which, of course, brings to mind The Flash, where it's like, how many speedsters does Barry need to go up against?
Yeah.
Because that was almost the go-to thing.
It really was.
And I think while they had their big bad of the seasons, it was getting almost predictable and cliche of, okay, we've got to introduce him at this point, get the twist at this point, the misdirect here, the big showdown here, and we're done. And it's not like they all hit those marks on the same point every season.
One, I'm also wondering if we introduced a possible partner for Marissa next season, professionally speaking.
If they do that, they need to make sure not to either duplicate what they did with Jace this season or run directly counter to it either. You know what I mean? So they need to do something on the FBI side, but I would almost expect that to be more Kylie than Marissa.
Well, person I'm thinking of as the potential partner seemed to have, from my perspective.
Oh, that's the one you were suspecting at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seemed to have zero respect for the psychology in Alec. He was the sniper's got a shot, let's take it, dude. Even if he wasn't sure if the shot was aimed at the right person. Because, you know, close enough.
I think with this kind of a show, much like Numbers and some of these other types of series, having the doubting Thomas gets old quick if they're not handled well. You wind up with what I'm going to call the Pulaski effect.
Yes.
From Next Generation.
Yeah.
We get rid of one doctor, we bring in Dr. Pulaski, because Dr. Crusher's not there for a variety of reasons. It seems like all of which are behind the scenes. Anyways, they bring in Dr. Pulaski, and one of the first things she does is be antagonistic towards Data, who's already a fan favorite character. And then nobody seems to like Dr. Pulaski. Why is that?
Yeah.
So, and that was, again, they were trying to do essentially a Dr. McCoy 2.0 kind of a thing with her in all the wrong ways. So trying to retread stuff is a mistake. Having somebody be openly antagonistic to the, effectively, the title character, if not literally the title character.
Well, I feared this guy was going to be antagonistic to both Mercers, Kylie and Alec.
Yeah, we'll see where they go. I think there's going to be an FBI side of the story. The question is, how do they balance the FBI side, the university side, the Mercer family side that kind of ties everything together?
And are we going to have what I'm going to phrase as a private contracting? And I don't mean necessarily going to court, but, well, like they implied Mark Cuban was calling for advice on something.
They had the corporate fixer and stuff, and is that sort of a thing going to come into play? Yeah, I think some of that comes down to what's the overall arc for the next season. They've got a number of ways they could bring cases in, not all of which they've even come close to exhausting in the 11 episodes.
Yeah.
So I think they're fine on that.
We didn't talk about the actual kidnapping episode with the teenage girl, which I kind of liked in terms of, I liked the scene out in front of the house.
Well, That was, again, one of the earlier episodes. And there's an aspect where Alec is like, because I think it's relevant, I'm going to mention that you were doing this, da-da-da-da, and does almost the Sherlock Holmes routine.
Yes.
And there's the tag at the end of, well, thank you for putting that out in the open kind of a thing.
Yeah. Well, I loved Marissa's reaction of just, what are you doing?
I think there's a show to be had where you've got that kind of Sherlock Holmes people reader who, for whatever reason, airs everybody's dirty laundry and stuff. And one of the recurring things, this guy almost always has a black eye, a couple of bruises.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Until somebody realizes he's doing it to punish himself as much as anything else, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Or because he can't help it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering when the first guest star from The Flash or one of the other Arrowverse shows is going to show up in The Irrational.
Mm.
I don't know if they have to. I don't know if they should. I'm not sure who I would bring in.
Danielle Panabaker, former student.
They could have done that with the gambling one.
Oh, they could have.
If they go with Grant Gustin, former student who tries to race through everything, seems like the obvious go-to kind of a deal. Or actually, it would have been another twist with him would be one of the physical therapists Alec had after rehab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, run, Alec, run.
Yeah.
There's some fun stuff they could do.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying the show, and I'm looking forward to a second season.
Me too.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.